Welcome to Going Beyond Medicine with Elaine Grohman. Conversations with people who are working to make a difference in our world. Now here's your host for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Elaine Grohman on Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. And as you know, the importance of Going Beyond Medicine and the focus of my show is to bring to the airways people that are doing very important work to help to better the world in many ways. And my guest today is Elena Mado, who is the CEO and chairman of an amazing organization called Medolac, which is bringing, it's a public benefits corporation, which is the first time I've ever heard of that, that is bringing the importance of human milk and the nutritional products that they create for the sickest of babies. So I want to welcome my guest, Elena Mado, to the show.
Thank you.
So can you please tell us what is Medolac and how it is that you and your wonderful daughter, Adriana Ware, began this important endeavor to help to save our most vulnerable babies?
Yes, thank you, Elaine. We started several years ago in looking at how we could bring the mother's milk to sick preterm babies who often don't have that option. And I think it started as far back as 91 when I was at an inner city hospital and got acquainted as much as one can with a very sick little baby who his mother had abandoned him in the hospital, and he did not have the benefit of having her milk. She was a terribly disadvantaged young mother who was a drug addict and also prostituting herself on the streets. Mm. And she never came back to see her baby. And the baby suffered through several illnesses, the second leading killer being a gut infection where the baby's intestines actually get infected, and they remove the infected tissue until the baby has really none left. And at that point, I really had a moment when I said, my gosh, this baby lost the mommy lottery. How is it fair that a patient's treatment in the hospital depends on who his mother is and what she's capable of doing? And that set me on a journey that has been over 30 years, where I've dedicated, and my daughter has dedicated her life as well, to improving access so that regardless of who a baby's mother is, that baby can get the advantages of getting human milk in the type of protein level and nutrient level that's needed for their particular age.
Elena, thank you so much for that beautiful story, heart-wrenching story. And what is so important, and I want to thank you and your daughter for what you're doing, because when I had the pleasure of meeting you not too long ago, I just felt this draw to the strength of not only being a woman, but being a mother and being a grandmother that is so evident with you. And with women, I think we understand if we don't take care of our most vulnerable children, then who are we as human beings? And that is what drew me so much to what you're doing. So thank you. I want to thank you as a mother and a grandmother personally. But I want to ask you, you know, so many people are not aware, unfortunately, of the challenges that a baby in the neonatology unit has when they don't have the benefits of their mother's natural milk. So can you tell us what science has understood about human breast milk that is so essential for a newborn, any newborn, but especially a newborn who has medical challenges like being born too early?
Certainly. Well, preterm babies, a lot of people think they're just small, that they just need to grow. But in essence, they're really fetuses. And because they're fetuses, they are not yet fully developed in how their organs function. Even the size of their intestinal system, if you took one to two droplets of breast milk, that's going to fill them up top to bottom. and their kidneys and their liver and their heart and their lungs, and all of those organs are massively underdeveloped. Their brain, instead of looking like a normal brain like we're used to seeing with all the folds and wrinkles, their brain is tiny and smooth. It doesn't have any of those structures yet. All of that development has to be done after birth, and it has to be done utilizing the nutrients that they receive through their gut system, which is not even designed to process food yet. Mm. And so there's a tremendous amount of research that shows that human milk is by far a lifesaver. Anything else is not human. It's made from either cow's milk or it's made from other types of proteins like soy or amino acids, and it's not suited to what the baby needs. They can survive on it, but they don't survive well, and many don't survive at all.
So the big problem, Elena, that I was reading through your website and the information that I received is this condition called NEC, necrotizing enterocolitis. And that is essentially, it becomes necrotizing tissue is dying tissue, right?
Correct.
So it is just not getting the natural nutrients that are designed to be metabolized from the mother. The mother is already in utero giving the baby all the nutrients that it needs. But amazingly, creation has designed the human body that once the baby is born, the breast milk is then being able to continue with that process of organ development, exactly what's needed,
correct,
right? So how is it that it became so, in your expertise, and you certainly have so much expertise, how was it or what was the impetus that created this misnomer that somehow formulas were better than breast milk?
Well, it goes back to the mid-century, 1950s, post-World War II, when blood banking was being developed because of plasma being shown to save soldiers that were bleeding out on the battlefield. Blood banking began, and milk banking began sort of in parallel to that. Then sometime in the 50s, the infant formula industry went from being sort of a doctor's formulation for mothers that either didn't want to breastfeed or there was really not a whole lot of intuitive knowledge at the time. There were many people that felt, of course, that human milk was the best for human babies, but there was this whole burgeoning industry that started that said, you know, human milk's just not that important. We're very scientific now, and we can have chemistry do better than the human body. Mm. And of course, we know the folly of that thought.
That's right.
But it became a multi-billion dollar industry that led up to, in 1971, it was the lowest ever incidence of mothers starting, even initiating breastfeeding. Less than 25% of new moms ever took their baby to breast, even right after birth. Mm. And so that's really where it got started. The truth in advertising issues came as a result, as moms were being led to believe that somehow infant formula was superior to their own milk, and undermined their own confidence. And it wasn't until the early 90s when breastfeeding really started to increase, and the U.S. Surgeon General invested in a project that would end up proving undeniably how much better, not only for the baby, but how much better for the mother than it is to breastfeed.
Yes, absolutely. Again, my guest is Elena Meadow, and she is the chairman and CEO of Meadowlac, and the website is www.medolac.com. and it is known as a public benefit corporation, which I find so very intriguing. Can you tell us about that? And then we're going to get back into a little bit more about how this kind of got mixed up in our thinking. And we really, but I'm very intrigued by this public benefits corporation, which is so important for us to understand. If we don't take care of ourselves, we're not going to be here.
Exactly. Well, the public benefit corporate law was adopted by Delaware in 2014, and it was a result of a movement that went across the U.S. that probably can be tracked back to Ben and Jerry, the ice cream makers, who had their corporation, they had their ice cream company, and they wanted to do good things for their community. They wanted to build a park. They wanted to give scholarships to their employees. And it wasn't too long until their shareholders said, well, wait a second, not with my profits. You're not allowed to divert my profits to go do what you want with it. Because under the traditional corporate law in the U.S., the primary responsibility that a company has is to return a profit to their shareholders. Well, Ben and Jerry started this movement and said, you know, we think that corporations in America should be more like corporations in Europe, where it's a given that you're going to return a social benefit. You're going to, whatever you're doing, you're going to do good things for three main areas: people, planet, and profits. So it's not that you become a nonprofit. Absolutely, you have a responsibility to return a profit to your shareholders. But as you're doing so, the public benefit law says it's okay for management and the board of directors to consider the social impact of your decisions.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for explaining that, because I think that, especially in our world now, that should be paramount. That should be the first and foremost thought of any corporation. What are we doing for the planet? What are we doing for one another? And again, I'm so grateful for what you're doing to help little ones that are the most vulnerable. And getting back to the story of how Medilac began, how is it that the measurement is made, Elena, that a baby is eligible or not eligible for breast milk, especially donor milk? And we have to understand, when a baby is born prematurely, maybe the mother's ability to lactate is not quite ready yet. So it's not that she doesn't want to breastfeed. She just, you know, her milk is not let down yet. So it just isn't making sufficient amounts, because her body's not ready, was not really ready to give birth at that time. So how is it that, what is the measurements that's being used, Elena, that kind of puts these babies in a perilous situation regarding their weight?
Right. Well, there's been, up until we started this company, there's been chronic shortages of donor milk. There has not been a scalable model to be able to produce, process, collect donor milk in the volumes needed so that economies of scale could be reached and the product could end up being affordable. So because of the scarcity and the expense of donor milk is rationed. And so in hospitals all across the country, there are guidelines that even though the baby is in the neonatal intensive care unit, which means that they're very sick, all babies in the neonatal intensive care unit are either very sick or they're at risk of becoming sicker, that those babies only get donor milk if they meet certain criteria, such as somewhat arbitrary combination of gestational age or weight. And this differs depending on what hospital the baby may be in. Hmm. Some hospitals in wealthier communities, babies all the way up to 1,500 grams or around 3 pounds get human donor milk. If their mother doesn't have milk or doesn't have enough milk, they get supplemented with donor milk. But at other hospitals, primarily very low-income hospitals that serve inner-city populations, what we call disproportionate share of care hospitals, where they're taking care of a disproportionate share of low-income patients, they may not even have donor milk available at all due to the expense. Or it may only be for babies that are under 1,000 grams or under 30 weeks gestation, which would be 10 weeks premature.
Mm-hmm.
And the paradox is also, even in hospitals where babies do receive donor milk, when they get beyond a certain weight or age, they're switched back onto infant formula. And I know of case after case when that has happened, and a baby has then gotten neck and died within 48 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's just, it's heartbreaking. And certainly rationing is a reality in our healthcare system. You can't give a 95-year-old alcoholic a liver, or that just doesn't make sense. It's not a good use of that liver that could go to a younger, healthier patient.
Right.
But with donor milk, it's absolutely crazy to ration something that is so effective and is certainly not the cost of a liver transplant. Mm.
Again, my guest is Elena Meadow, and she is the chairman and CEO of Medolac, MEDOLAC.com, which is an organization that helps to not only collect, but helps to distribute human milk and understanding the nutritional quality that is so important for a baby in a NICU, or which is a neonatal ICU. So obviously, Elena, the big challenge is, how do you get the milk? How do you get enough breast milk donated? And that's the next thing that I would like to ask you. Can you please talk to that and how you went about creating this Mother's Milk Cooperative?
Yes. Yes. In fact, the very essence of a public benefit corporation is to look at how things can be done that benefits everyone along the way. And certainly, there's been two separate problems that have been discussed in two completely separate environments. One of the problems is this lack of donor milk and lack of access for many babies. The other problem is, with no maternity leave, women have no choice but to go back to work, sometimes within 10 days after giving birth.
Yes.
And this really impacts their own ability to breastfeed their baby. And so we kind of took those two worlds and put them together and said, hey, how about this? How about women don't have to replace their income? All they have to do is replace what they would net if they did go back to work after paying daycare and transportation and all the other costs of going back to work. And so we were able to take part in an FDA hearing where all aspects of donor milk were being explored, and the subject came up about whether mothers could be paid for their milk. There was a longstanding belief that, like organ donation, you cannot pay for breast milk. And yet nobody could find the law or the statute that prohibited this. And so at the FDA hearing, we had the opportunity to explore that with virtually every legislator and regulator that was there. And we found that there was no such law that prevented women from being paid for their milk. And so we got a USDA cooperative development grant from Michigan State at Lansing.
Oh.
And we formed the Mother's Milk Co-op and took about 2 years to figure out how to make it true to the cooperative law in every single way. And as such, then on Mother's Day 2014, we launched the Mother's Milk Co-op. And we've never looked back. Women own, each of the co-op members must have a blood test to show that they're healthy and qualified. And then their milk is tested. And they get paid $1 an ounce for their milk as long as they pass all of these tests. And because of this program, a tremendous number, literally thousands of women who have gone through the co-op program have been able to stay at home longer, nurse their own baby much longer than they expected to do, and contribute to the need for the milk to be able to send to us, and we are able to process it, formulate it to what the preemies need, and make it available to hospitals at reasonable prices.
Mm. And you know, thank you so much for explaining that, because I think it's so important to understand, you know, that there were times in human history that people just shared what they had. I mean, if they understood, it wasn't about making money. But it, you know, but now that it has come to being a focus about making money, how is a woman going to recoup the funds that she needs to have to help to support her family if she's forced to go back to work in a very short period of time? And so it just makes so much sense from a heart perspective and from an economic perspective that if a mother is able to take care of her own child for a longer period of time, that child themselves will be physiologically healthier in terms
Correct.
Of their ability to receive their mother's natural immune system through their colostrum and then through their just the care. Because we certainly know that children that are nurtured, physically nurtured, are going to be better physically and a better sound mind and body. But then, of course, also to be of benefit to those who cannot, for whatever reason, take care of their children. You know, whether it's they don't have enough milk. So thank you so much for having the foresight and the drive, Elena, to do that.
Thank you.
I thank you. So please help us understand, in the past, if I'm not mistaken, that the big challenge was trying to freeze milk, right? Freeze milk that was collected.
Correct.
And then what would be the challenge then? Making sure that the refrigeration temperature was right. And how did you solve that problem? Or what was that problem,
right.
perhaps?
Well, the problem has been that there's been a network of community public milk banks that have existed since about the 1980s. And those folks work very, very hard to make milk available to children in their community. But those public milk banks are nonprofit, and they have limited funds for R&D. And as the value of human milk has been recognized and has increased, so has the demand by hospitals. And so what was really needed was an evolution of how milk is processed. So the methods used traditionally by milk banks has been very, very old-fashioned dairy methods, something called the holder pasteurization method, which is 62 degrees centigrade for 30 minutes. And then the product would have to be frozen afterwards and held frozen until it's time to use it. Because this holder method of pasteurization does not kill all the spoilage bacteria. It only kills a certain percent. And it does not destroy spores. And spores that are in milk can bloom into, again, spoilage bacteria. Mm. Because you're dealing with very sick babies, really the spoilage bacteria represents a risk. And so this milk that has been available up until when we brought our new methods out had to be shipped overnight, Federal Express, which adds substantially to the expense. If it gets lost along the way or delayed, it spoils. So that's a complete waste. Once it's received, it has to be put into the freezer at the hospital. And prior to being used, it has to go through a thawing process. All of those things take time and money.
Yes.
And once it is thawed, it can only be held for 24 hours and it must be discarded.
Mm.
So we looked at other ways to preserve the milk. And one of the ways has been a higher temperature, shorter time process that actually kills all the bacteria, kills all the spores, and allows the milk to be stored at room temperature for 3 years.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, and we're going to take a real quick break here, Elena. So when we come back, we're going to talk about how Medilac really helped to launch the first commercially sterile human milk product so that, you know, more babies could be served and less waste. Again, my guest is Elena Meadow, and she is the founder and CEO of Medilac, a public benefits corporation, which is working to bring human milk and the nutritional products that it has and the natural benefits it has to babies who are most vulnerable in the NICU, the neonatal ICU, and helping to prevent the catastrophic loss of babies unnecessarily. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Again, this is Elaine Grohman on Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. Please stay with us.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom, but a little over a year ago, we realized she couldn't take care of herself without our help. And well, how could I not be there for her? I had no idea how hard it would be and just what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and, even for me, ways to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics that got me started, but also information about the hurdles I was facing in this new role. I could even connect with experts and hear from others who had been in my place. I know this road we're on isn't an easy one, but I'm really happy to have the extra help for her and for me. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. This message is brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Begin by finding a comfortable, relaxed position. Let out whatever stress is in your body. It could be from the time you left your daughter's blouse in the dryer too long and it shrunk 4 sizes, or when you donated her private diary to the public library, or when you thought chaperoning the school dance meant actually dancing in the school dance. Whatever it is, let it go. The fire you started with that experimental dinner, let it go. The time you drove away from the gas pump with the gas pump, let it go. 3, very relaxed. 2, there you go. 1.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Now back to Elaine Grohman and Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back. This is Elaine Grohman on Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. And my guest today is Elena Meadow, and she is the chairman and CEO of Medilac, a public benefits corporation. And its function is to bring human milk nutrition to our most vulnerable babies who are born premature that are in NICU centers across the globe, not just in the United States, but she's now has become an industry leader in this very important nutritional substance that we need just for life to be preserved and continued. So welcome back to the show, Elena.
Thank you.
So when we just ended the first segment, we were talking about the challenges that are inherent in trying to store and move frozen milk, which was the kind of gold standard before. But you've helped to make a more commercially viable sterile human milk packaging. Can you tell us about that, please?
Yes, and we used a method that's very well proven. It's been used to process preterm infant formula for 30 years, and the difference is that the flexible packaging that we use requires very, very short amount of duration of heat. So we developed this and tested it, and of course have all the data to show the retention of nutrients and vitamins and minerals and so forth for babies. And it's made the product much more accessible. It requires high volumes to be able to make it practical, which is probably why it was never done before. And it's been very successful. The hospitals love it because the nurses don't have to thaw the milk and wait for it to be ready to be fed. They don't have to worry about how long it's been in the freezer or how long since it's thawed. And so it reduces the cost substantially and makes it much easier for the nurses to be able to use with these babies.
Well, it reminded me, Elena, of like total parental nutrition. If somebody is not able to eat of their own, is kind of in the same kind of packaging. And, well, some are in cans, but I've seen them when they're in these
foil.
Yeah,
a foil pouch.
Thank you. That was the word I was looking for. That just makes it so much easier to, number one, store, not have to have the expensive refrigeration and the space needed for refrigeration, and can have it be sitting there for a longer period of time without having to worry about spoilage, right?
Correct. So, and once it's opened, it's good for 7 days in the refrigerator.
Oh, wow. So is this helping then, Elena? And again, my guest is Elena Meadow, who is the chairman and CEO of Medilac, which is a public benefits corporation to bring human milk to our most vulnerable babies. Are you seeing, Elena, that this is offering more babies the opportunity to get, to widen the span of both the gestational age and the weight so that it's available to more children for longer periods of time in their most vulnerable states?
Yes, indeed. And we're really proud of the fact that a good number of hospitals that we're supplying the product to have never used donor milk before.
Oh, my.
And that's been for a myriad of reasons. But the primary reason has been that the expense and the difficulty accessing the milk.
So as I look at your beautiful brochure, which is your first inaugural public benefits report, you had 1.5 million ounces of human donor milk processed thus far. That was between 2016 and 2017, right?
Correct.
So how much more are you able to process now? Is it because you have this broader range of mother's milk cooperatives globally, or is this what's creating this abundance?
Yes. Right. We have abundance. I think that the idea of scarcity has been extremely deceptive. And I'm not suggesting anything nefarious there, but the scarcity that has existed or that has been perceived has driven the prices up very, very high to where it's priced out for many, many hospitals. And so, we only collect milk, by the way, from the lower 48 states. It's just too expensive to bring it in from Alaska or Hawaii. Mm. However, there's 2.5 million nursing mamas in the U.S. Every year. And those moms, the majority of them, are faced with the problem of having to go back to work and continue with either a second income, or if there's single mom head of household, the only income that the household has.
That's right.
And so we have an abundance of healthy breastfeeding women in America. It's just been really a matter of constructing a program that is valuable to them because it serves their needs as well as them being able to serve the needs of these sick babies.
So, Elena, how are you going about educating women, let's say, that are coming into the hospital, they're ready to deliver? Are hospitals and labor and delivery nurses aware of what your service is so that moms know that they have it available and or they can become contributors to breast milk for other people's babies in the future?
Yes, although we have been, when we first launched the program, we were absolutely inundated with applications, over 3,000 applications almost overnight.
Wow.
That's where it came in very, very handy that we had prepared for scale. We had built the company to scale and have a fully automated donor, incoming donor questionnaires, donor qualification program. We partnered with the American Red Cross, national testing labs, and with LabCorp nationwide so that women could go to any of the 1,500 locations for LabCorp and get their blood drawn. Then that blood was shipped to the American Red Cross for testing, and then the results would automatically migrate through a secure laboratory information management system and populate that donor's record. And so it's not a matter of somebody receiving a hard copy of a blood test and punching in the results. That's very much the way that it's been done in the past. And so those programs lack scale. We have the ability now to, again, start growing and start accepting more donors. There was actually so much milk for a while that we had to suspend donor applications because we had more than enough to serve the market that we had at that current time. Now we're expanding beyond that market, going into hospitals and states and territories that we haven't been in before. And it's pretty exciting.
Congratulations. That's wonderful. And how does, if a woman is interested in being a donor, how would you best have them reach out to you, Elena?
Oh, they'd want to go to the mother's, the website called mothersmilk.coop.
Okay.
Mothersmilk.coop. And that gives them all the information that they need in order to either become a donor or get on the waiting list to become a donor.
Okay. And then, so obviously then you would give them the information, what they have to do in order to collect their milk safely. Well, first, actually,
correct,
obviously to be able to be screened to make sure that they're as healthy as possible, because obviously that's paramount. And then, and then to have that donor milk be a part of, you know, really saving lives, which is amazing. So I see that you have different kinds of milk now that is lactose free. And then you have what's called Benefit 18 and 20. And can you explain what that is and why we have the need for that? What is it?
Certainly. Certainly. So a lot of hospitals are becoming what's called baby friendly. And it's a designation from UNICEF that is an initiative to increase breastfeeding by increasing the support structure within hospitals. So baby friendly hospitals have now made a move to try to avoid giving formula supplementation to full term babies in postpartum. Sometimes mama is tired or she's had a C-section, and for whatever reason, she's not quite ready to start nursing. And so these hospitals have started using our donor milk to supplement the babies so that infant formula is not given at all. Mm. And so the 18, the Benefit 18, is pretty average human breast milk. It's 18 calories per ounce, and it's formulated to be consistently at that level. Whereas in the NICU or for babies that have heart conditions or other physical problems, they may require more calories, more protein, different type of formulations. And the same thing with the lactose-free. Babies born less than 32 weeks can't make lactase in the levels that they need in order to break down the lactose, which is a sugar in human milk. And so we do it for them with a lactose-free. We treat it with lactase so that the baby has the simple sugars, the glucose and galactose that they would normally get if they were able to break down the lactase themselves.
Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, I was curious as to why that is, and that just makes total sense. If the baby can't, his body isn't able to metabolize that, then you don't want to give them something that they can't, that would cause a further challenge. So I imagine it is so heartwarming for you, Elena, to see how children are thriving that maybe in the past would have been very challenged and limited in their, you know, metabolic support as well as then their ability to thrive. So how are you seeing that, you know, that going forward that these children are much healthier preemies, or then they're less, you know, healthier infants, toddlers, and growing from that point of view?
Right. Well, there's short and long-term evidence of the benefits of human milk. And of course, when we process our milk, we do lose some immune factors and so forth, but the long-term results on donor milk is very encouraging, and especially when you compare it to the alternative, which would be a cow milk-based formula. I might add that we're the first company to provide milk in the home as well.
I was just going to ask you
that.
Great.
Yes, we have lots of healthy full-term babies born to non-traditional families, gay dads, adoptive families, surrogates, and we're thrilled to be able to supply those families with human milk. And those babies' growth has been tracked. They do well. Of course, we always want them to be under the care of a physician. That's just a physician or a midwife or a healthcare provider. But it's very exciting that those babies have the opportunity, as well as babies who come home from the hospital and have to try to adjust to infant formula because the donor milk has not been available at home, and they do badly and they're at the risk of being put back in the hospital, and insurance companies are actually starting to pay for human donor milk in the home. If it prevents a rehospitalization, it makes solid economic sense.
Oh, it most certainly does. And I wish I knew about you, because when one of my grandchildren really had a terrible time with, you know, all kinds of gastroenterological problems, and this may have been, you know, and I know of other young women who were forced to go back to work very quickly because of the pressures of their jobs. And you may be able to speak to this. I know of one mother who was just having so much trouble with their baby, just, you know, always having like projectile vomiting and then, you know, terrible diarrhea and all kinds of things. And they recognized that it was a bacteria that was actually in the breast pump that was creating problem, you know, because not for any fault of the mom. It's just the way these things are designed. They're not easy to sterilize. You know,
right.
So
and biofilms can form on breast pump parts. And we actually received a breast pump kit from a hospital who asked us to analyze it. And we have a partnership with a center for biofilm engineering. And we discovered that there absolutely were biofilms on the breast pump kit. And every drop of milk that would go across that biofilm would become contaminated.
Oh.
So women need to change their kits every couple of months if they're pumping full time. If they're pumping daily, they need to just get a new kit, because once a biofilm is formed, it cannot be removed in the home.
Oh, boy. And I can only imagine, too, there's so many, you know, incidences of multiples being born. I have a sweet friend who had triplets, and, you know, how can you, your body cannot possibly make enough milk for three
days. Actually, it can.
Really?
It actually
can. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
But you must be exhausted.
Not really. As mammals, we are designed to make, initially when our milk comes in, the reason it comes in with such a volume is that we are designed to make milk for the highest multiple birth that we would naturally have.
Wow. That's
and
amazing.
So when you hear mom say, when I got my milk in, I had enough for three or four babies. Yes, she did.
Wow.
What happens is if you don't remove all that milk, then the supply adjusts down to what is actually being removed by your one or two babies. Mm. But if you remove all that milk, if you put in the babies to breast, you absolutely can make a tremendous amount of milk.
Well, thank you for correcting me on that, because I'm glad to know that I'm wrong.
no worries.
So again, looking through this wonderful, the inaugural public benefits report, which is really so rich with information, there's been $2 million turned over to donor mothers through your corporation, which is amazing.
Yes.
And they can make on average, $800 a month for donor breast milk. So that can give a mom a cushion of relief, so that maybe she's not needing to rush back to go back to work, or give her an opportunity to maybe work from home a little bit longer than she might otherwise. That's so important.
Yes. And the moms that have been taken part in the Mother's Milk Co-op have done some remarkable things. We've had women that have started their own businesses. We've had women that have gone back to college and finished their nursing degree, or paid off their car, or even taken the family on a vacation for the first time ever.
And that's
really
so
exciting.
Beautiful. And you know what else is really touching me, and we often forget about it until something catastrophic happens, is that you also have humanitarian support. If there is an emergency, if there's a fire, if there's a earthquake, if there's different things, when we forget about the infrastructure that is so important, that what if there's babies that are not getting their mom's breast milk because the mom isn't getting maybe enough adequate water or nutrition or whatever. So how is, you're obviously working to help with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which is so beautiful.
Yes, and what we do as well, we have two programs in the co-op. There's the Pay It Forward and the Milk Money. And the Milk Money program is self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. Moms get paid, and the majority of moms do donate to that. But the Pay It Forward program is something that they can also participate in when they get their cooler to put their milk in. An extra bag is inside, and it says pay it forward any amount you can. And they will put, mostly all moms put some milk in that bag, and we keep track of how much milk is donated in that to that program. And we process it for free, and we provide it for free at the request of a physician.
Wow.
And we ask that physician to please give us a report on how that milk was used. We recently had a baby that had a genetic disorder at birth that meant that the baby was not going to survive longer than a few months. And the mother was at the end of a rope and had tried nursing, but the baby screamed constantly. And so a doctor requested that we provide some of our milk for this baby to provide some relief and some palliative care. We did that. We provided milk to feed this baby full time. I believe it was 4.5 months of milk.
Oh.
And the baby was able to not have as many seizures, not have as long or as often of crying bouts, which is very unnerving. I can't even imagine the courage of that poor mom and dad to care for that baby, knowing that that baby would not survive. And to try to just make these tragic situations just a little bit easier for moms and dads that are going through it.
Oh, that, I used to work in hospice, and one of the most challenging was the pediatric hospice. And that,
yeah,
to know that you're, are a part of that, and then that you're really helping to, as you said, for those who are not familiar with the term, palliative care is pain and symptom management. To be able to let that family and that baby have whatever quality of life is so essential for however long that life is such a beautiful commitment,
right,
to our humanity. It is such
thank
a beautiful
you.
Commitment. So thank you for
well,
what
it's
you're
an
doing.
Honor. It's an honor to be able to do it. And we feel very lucky to have that possibility, because we truly believe that even though these babies are often here for a very short amount of time, some of these babies make more impact on the world than somebody who lives to be 90 and is selfish and in their own world and never does anything for anyone. So it's just a miracle to see how powerful these little spirits really are and how much they have to give to everyone around them.
Isn't that the truth? You know, when we get to the awareness of seeing every human life begins this way, we begin our life vulnerable, every single one of us. And, you know, if we did not have someone in our life taking care of us, where would we be? So we have no idea. Are we taking care of a future leader? Are we taking care of a little mama or a daddy that's coming in the future? Are we taking care of someone that we never know to what extent that spirit will understand the care that they were given? And so important.
And that's why when I see a mom, it's hard to believe that people still harass women who are breastfeeding in public. I make it a point when I see a mom breastfeeding in public, maybe at a bus stop, trying to cover up, worried that she's going to be criticized, I give her a big smile and give her a thumbs up. Mm-hmm. And I would just encourage anybody who encounters a mom trying to breastfeed a baby, give them a thumbs up.
That's right.
They deserve it. And you should just see their face just melts. They just look so relieved. Like they have a friend. They have someone who approves of what they're doing.
That's right. Again, my guest is Elena Meadow, and she is the founder and CEO of MeadowLac, which is an organization, a beautiful company that is an industry leader for innovative human milk nutritional products for both hospital and home use, and is really opening the possibilities to really help our most vulnerable babies, those that are born premature or born with some challenge where they're having metabolic challenges, to give them the most natural form of nutrition, which is human milk. There is nothing more compatible for the way this little body is designed than from another human being. And so, but I'm really intrigued when, you know, for those people that are also in a broader way looking at the environmental stewardship, which I think I love that you have a page in your document here, your benefits report. What is the environmental stewardship that you're involved with also to help people understand this is a global benefit?
Yes. Exactly. Well, we feel that, again, the people, planet, and profits paradigm. And when you avoid having a frozen product that has to be shipped overnight, FedEx, and stored in a freezer in the hospital, you cut down on carbon emissions and you cut down on the carbon footprint. And so what we did, we contracted with a company in New York by the name of Accountability. They do audits of companies, audit against what the company itself has decided to try to accomplish. And they look at how well that company did in the lens of what they set out to do. Mm-hmm. And so they conducted our public benefit review and did the analysis on what that actually means in terms of avoiding a frozen product. And we're excited. The next report will be in 2 years. It'll be in 2020. And with the massive increase in volume that we anticipate, we think that we will probably be able to save enough carbon footprint to power over 10,000 homes for a year.
Wow.
And to us, you know, it's one thing to set out to do good things in some abstract way, but we're very serious about measuring our outcomes and saying, how well did we do? How can we do better at this? And incidentally, hospitals are under the same type of pressure to decrease the carbon footprint that they produce and to be able to economize on the environment the way that we help them do. So we've been very heartened by the fact that hospitals have responded extremely well to our public benefit reports.
Mm, that is so beautiful. And I know I had a brief discussion about one thing that I had learned when I met you in California, which was such a joy, was that, you know, in ancient times, and really not so ancient, but, you know, there was a great wisdom among the indigenous elders that knew that, you know, not only was human breast milk capable of obviously helping a newborn baby grow, but also had the capacity to help someone who was very sick regain their health. So there is so little that we have known about this important elixir that creates life and sustains life, and just is so amazing. So it's such an honor to have met you, Elena, and such an honor to have you on this show. And thank you for standing up for our most vulnerable. And as a woman, you know more than, you know, guys sitting around a boardroom table. You know, this is what we need. This is what we need. If we're not taking care of our most vulnerable, then what on earth are we doing?
Exactly.
Right. So, again, my guest is Elena Meadow. She is the CEO and chairman of Meadowlac, a public benefit corporation. And how, if anyone has any questions or they're interested, again, in learning more about you, what you're doing, maybe there's scientists that want to learn how they can come involved with you. What's the best way for people to reach out to you, Elena?
Oh, just email info@meadowlac.com.
Okay, great.
And depending on what the nature of the question is, we'd be happy to respond. And we invest a lot in research. We support research. And so if any healthcare providers or scientists are interested in any aspect of research, we're getting set up to form a biorepository of human milk samples that will be available to researchers for that purpose.
Wonderful.
And we feel that for something that's been around for so long, you're absolutely right, Elaine, there needs to be a lot more discovery about exactly what these 100,000 different components in human milk, mm-hmm. what they really are, because we only really know what about 50 of them are.
That's right, because science, after all, is the study of what already is. And if we really...
That's true.
You know? So, and again, I want to thank you to your the mother-daughter duo, which I love, is that you work with your daughter. Elena Meadow is my guest, and her daughter, Adriana Weir, have been these two women pioneering together to help to bring human breast milk to our most vulnerable babies, and in turn, helping society be our best selves. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, Elena, for all that you do. And I plan on staying in touch with you, my dear.
Me too.
And this is Elaine Grohman for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. And never underestimate what you can do when you see a need and you look at it and what can I do? Look at what Elena has done to help to save countless babies now and into the future. Thank you very much.